You're tuned in to the internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board from AboveTopSecret.com. This is ATS. ATS Mix.
Government conspiracies, government cover-ups, you know, political scandals. People are taking the time to research it, look into it.
And that's another area, I think, where we stand out is that we embrace discussion of everything and don't necessarily find one topic.
Teamism, if you will, of AboveTopSecret.com. If nothing else, we're getting a whole lot of people interested in the questions.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com starts now. The following is an ATS Mix exclusive interview.
These aren't the right wristbands.
Yes, they are.
Hi, everybody. The ATS Mix Show is really thrilled to have with us tonight a guy that I have read his most recent book, Egypt, An Extraterrestrial and Time Traveler Experiment. And I want to tell you a little bit about this gentleman before I introduce him to the membership of AboveTopSecret.com and to our worldwide audience. Dr. Bruce Goldberg holds a BA degree in biology and chemistry. He's a doctor of dental surgery and has a master's degree in counseling psychology. He retired from dentistry in 1989 and since then has concentrated on his thriving international hypnotherapy practice in Los Angeles, California. He's the author of 20 best-selling and award-winning books, including Past Lives, Future Lives. The book is in the first book ever written on progression hypnotherapy, taking patients actually into the future of their lives. His second book, The Search for Grace, was made into a television movie by CBS, and Dr. Goldberg was the consultant for that particular film. Dr. Goldberg is sought after as a guest and has appeared on numerous television and radio shows throughout the country, including Oprah, Regis, Jerry Springer, Montel, CNN, CBS, ABC, Fox, just to name a few. His print exposure includes the Washington Post, Time, and the Los Angeles Times. He has conducted more than 35,000 past life regressions and future life progressions since 1974. He's also helped thousands of patients to empower themselves through the use of these valuable techniques. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Bruce Goldberg. Hi, Bruce. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Dave. I appreciate your kind introduction, and I'm very much looking forward to this interview.
Well, good. I am too. I tell you, it's an amazing bio, number one, and number two, the research that I have done personally on you just is just unbelievable. And Bruce, if you don't mind, I always like starting an interview kind of finding out, you know, when you were a young kid, you know, what was the thing that you think was the thing that really you said, oh, man, this is just so interesting, and you wanted to pursue something. Now, obviously, you were in the dental profession, but, I mean, you know, what got your interest really peaked when you were a young man?
Okay, well, I'll tell you the story that got me into past life regression, future life progression therapy, and we talk about time travelers and ETs and all the other fun stuff was this. When I was growing up, I came from a background where I was a very poor background, so I had to work my way through school, which I did not mind, but it did take away the ability for me over time for me to explore a lot of other avenues that I might would have wanted to, since I have a very strong intellectual and scholarly background or interests.
Right.
Well, I was very much, when I went through high school and college, I was in a pre-dental program. I really did not care a whole lot. I wasn't really, even though it was the 60s, I wasn't into all the new age movements, okay? I was just trying to get myself, trying to, you know, had to work, had to go through school, I had to make sure I got enough good grades to get in dental school. There was the Vietnam War on, you know, the grades had to be very high. So I really didn't have any interest at all in this field or anything to do with this until I was a sophomore in dental school. This goes back to 1972. I had read the Bridie Murphy story, or I had heard of the Bridie Murphy story. I hadn't read it. And I figured that this, I had taken a little astrology course during the summer break of my sophomore year in dental school. And I kind of liked it. I said to myself, you know, this is kind of fun. This is kind of like a pseudoscience, if you will. But it was helping me understand a relationship of mine, that why there were difficulties with this woman. I'm a Scorpio. She was a Leo. You can understand the problems. Okay. and so I figured that. So while I was there, somebody had mentioned the Bridie Murphy case. And I said, well, I had heard briefly of that, but I didn't know what it was in detail. So there was a New Age, what they call it, they didn't call it in those days, but it was a New Age bookstore in downtown Baltimore, North Charles Street. And I figured that I'll go there, and something just led me to go there. Something just,
right.
it was an incident that happened where I was working as like a security guard for the summer to get some extra income, and I was working double shifts, and I was really tired one Saturday afternoon. I got home about 5 o'clock, and I just was dead. I think I'm just going to take a nap and just sleep. Well, something got me up and said, go downtown. Some voice or something said, go down to this bookstore. So I said, oh, come on, man, leave me alone. But I was thinking, okay, I decided not to ignore voices or instincts, if you will. So I went down to this bookstore. This woman, she was about, I don't know, 6 feet plus tall blonde woman, looked like a Greek goddess, comes up to me as I enter the bookstore, and she goes, come back with me to the aisle here. I have a book for you. And I don't know who this woman is. I figure, well, you know, Amazon time, right? So I go back to, the end of the aisle, and she hands me The Search for Bridie Murphy, which is a documented case of reincarnation that occurred back in the 1950s in Colorado. And I said, okay, so I'm going to – I look at the book. I turn around. My back's to her. As I turn around, she just literally disappears before my very eyes.
Wow.
Yeah, this is heavy. So I said to myself, now, remember, I worked for 20 hours in a row, so I figured maybe I'm just overtired, you know, or whatever, because I'm not prone to delusions, right? And I said to myself, well, something's weird here. But I looked at the book, and that book literally got me very interested in the whole field of reincarnation. And I decided that I was going to at least experiment with the idea of using hypnosis. Of course, I was going to use hypnosis in my dental practice anyway for pain control and apprehension. So that was kind of a given. And I figured that while I'm doing that, why don't I see if I can just experiment and play with the concept of taking someone into a past life? What have I got to lose? If the first comes to shove, I'll just, you know, chuck it. Well, the very first person I worked with was a friend of mine. I didn't know she had these two habits and a phobia, and I was just experimenting, doing several regressions on her, and she overcame these two habits and the phobia while I was doing this, even though I was really, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just experimenting. I said to myself, well, wait a minute now. The universe is trying to tell me something because, you know, I didn't have a lot of respect and still don't for a lot of forms of psychotherapy, and I figured this thing was quick. It worked great, and I knew her for several years later, and she was obviously didn't relapse back to her habits or her phobia. And I figured this is really cool. So that led me to work with the idea of establishing at least a part-time practice initially in past life therapy. And then within just a few years, about 3 years later, now we're talking about 1977, I asked the patient to go to the origin of a problem. I didn't say go back. I said go to the origin, and she went to the 23rd century. And that was the big birth of future life progression therapy. And I wrote my first book, Past Lives, Future Lives, which was the first book ever written on future life progression, established the whole field, and then established the field of accessing what we call the higher self, the perfect part of our soul, so a patient can actually raise the quality of their soul's energy and permanently remove themselves from the vulnerability to issues, whether it be habits, phobias, procrastination, meeting Mr. Wrong or Miss Wrong or whatever, and actually help them grow spiritually. And that's exactly what I do. So then, of course, later on, a few years later, then there was the ET contacts and the abductees that came into my life when it comes to working with patients. And then, of course, the big one, which, of course, is the theme of the Egypt, an extraterrestrial and time travel experiment, brand new book, is the idea of time travelers coming in. And this book is the only, other than my previous book, Time Travels from Our Future, it's the only two books ever, nonfiction book written about time travelers, detailing the names, dates, and places, the mechanisms, who they are, and how they function, and why they function.
Wow. Well, you know, I tell you, Bruce, I want to, I'm going to stop you every now and then because I love all the members of the AboveTopSecret.com and all our fans, the 23 million and some odd, they know I love sidebars. And I want to kind of back up just a tad in this progression of what you just got through telling me about and just ask you a couple of questions as you know, kind of going back in time, if you will. What got you out of the dental business, you know, looking in people's mouths into the psychotherapy routine?
Well, see, understand, when I deal with the media, they have a hard, always have a hard time with this. When I was interviewed back in the late 70s, early 80s, when I established my dental practice, my practice was established formally as private practice in 1976 after a residency, a couple of years after dental school. But and I practiced full-time for not even 2 years, and then I had a part-time hypnotherapy practice specializing in regression and progression.
Okay,
but very quickly quickly I made it hypnotherapy full-time, and dentistry was 10 hours a week. So guys who play golf more than I practice dentistry, you know? And see, the media never understands that because they say, you can't do that. And I said, sure, I can. I said, I can do whatever I want. And so therefore, my hypnotherapy practice was like 50 hours a week, and I was practicing dentistry about 10 hours a week. So therefore, giving up dentistry when I moved out to Los Angeles in 1989 was not a big thing. It was just like giving up a hobby because it was only small hours a week. And this practice had dominated my life, obviously, with the media work I've done, with the books and everything, and the workshops and articles and scientific journals that I've done. In other words, hypnosis was and has been and is and will be the theme of my life and my karmic purpose. Dentistry was simply a stepping stone. I didn't know it at the time until years later, but dentistry was a stepping stone. It gave me a great medical background, gave me psychosomatic medical background. It got me interested in things like quantum mechanics and things like that, which are already added to my armamentarium for this field, made me very qualified. And to me, credibility was everything, because with patients as well as with the media and with publishers, and it just allowed me to do my thing.
Oh, sure, of course. Of course. Okay, well, then my next logical question is, you know, I am very familiar from past life regressions and stuff, but, you know, I had never until I got your book and then also started doing research on you, I never knew until then that you could actually take someone forward into a life that they haven't even had a chance to experience yet. Is that a pretty interesting, I don't know. How difficult is it to go into the future, I guess, is where I'm going with this, Bruce?
Well, if Jerry Springer can do it, anyone can do it, okay? I worked with Jerry several years ago when I was on his show. And I was on a show for a whole hour, and the producer, at my suggestion, by the way, I said, I'd like to really make this thing look good. I want to take Jerry into a past life and forward into a future life. And the producer said, look, this guy is a lawyer. He's a media guy here. He doesn't believe in this stuff. I mean, he'll do the interview because it's ratings and stuff. We know who you are, but it's not going to work. And I said, look, I work with skeptics all the time. Okay, not a problem. And Jerry was actually a very nice guy. He's very, very friendly, very gregarious, very social guy. So he says, okay, doctor, he says, you know my attitude about this, but I'll work with you on this. Let's see what happens. He goes into a past life in the 1600s, early 1600s in London, around the London countryside, where he is like a policeman, a knight, so to speak. And he's about seven or eight of his merry men are patrolling the countryside, and there's a bunch of swordsmen attacking this damsel in distress. And there's about 10 of them, so they outnumber Jerry's men. Well, they get into a fight about it, of course, trying to protect her, and Jerry is severely wounded during this battle because he's outnumbered. The guys leave them alone. The woman lives in a nearby castle. She's sort of like the courtesan to this whatever. She's in whatever, the nearby castle in the countryside. So she takes Jerry in and nurses him back to health. Of course, he's wounded, so he can't be a knight anymore. But she gives him like a job as a butler, if you will. So she extends his life several years. Eventually, he dies. And when I asked Jerry at the end of the life, if that woman that you saved who actually extended your life, if you've known her in your current life, who is she? And Jerry says, it's Kirsty, his current wife's daughter.
Wow.
Now we have karmic family with karmic family values here. Now, going into the future life. Now, so Jerry, of course, was amazed by this, and the producer's going crazy. She says, keep it going, you know.
Now, you did this on his show, did you not?
In fact, for your listeners, just as a sidebar here before we go back to the sidebar, if your listeners, if they go to my website, I have a homepage which has a link to free videos. They can see a video of Jerry's regression.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's drbrucegoldberg.com. That's D as in David, R as in Robert, and then you spell Bruce, B-R-U-C-E. GOLDBERG.com. If you click onto the free videos link, there's 13 different videos of people going into past lives. There's Jerry, of course.
Yeah. In fact, I'm right there on your homepage right now. It's amazing, Bruce.
There's future life progressions on there. You've got a time
articles,
travel contact videos
links
on there.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a whole bunch of fun stuff. So your listeners or your can actually experience it rather than just me talking about it. But now we go into the future. So now Jerry says, okay, now what's next? I said, now I want you to go into a future life, which is very significant to your karmic purpose. And he goes into about 100 years from now, he's going to be a rancher in Montana called Montana Bobby, and he's going to be supplying foodstuff to a moon base that we have, and he makes these sorties from Montana to the moon and, you know, brings all kinds of materials up there and his colleagues and his team, and then he comes back. One fine day on returning to Earth from the moon on one of these sorties, his craft crashes into the ocean, and he dies and drowns. Now, the reason why that's relevant is today. Now, his producer told me this. I didn't know anything about Jerry. His producer tells me that. In fact, Jerry told me this. He made it on the air. He said when he goes to a country club, like in the summertime to go swimming, he says he loves to go off the high board, But he freaks. He goes up there, but he can't jump off. He's afraid of the heights and the water. And the reason is not from any past life or the early stage of this life, but because of a future life experience or trauma.
Wow.
That's Jerry. And Jerry will testify to that today. He loved the experience. And I also work with now the complete opposite, a person who is the most negative, anti-New Ager, just the most difficult person and the pain of the neck to work with all due respect, was Montel Williams. Montel looked at me with his hands folded across his chest and said, you know, ex-Navy SEAL guy, trying to be tough, right?
He's
a linebacker for the Chicago Bears. You know? He looks at me and he says, all right, if you can do it to me, okay? So he takes me back to, this is in CBS Television City when he had his show back in Los Angeles. Yeah. So I go back there with his brother Herman, who is a witness, because he didn't trust me. Of course, Montel is a little bit paranoid about things.
He's paranoid about a lot of things.
Well, maybe still, you know. Okay. So now we go back in the office, and he's got this, you know, nice couch, and he's got everything. So I said, let's do the regression. So he says, all right, do what you want, but it's not going to work, you know. But meanwhile, he goes back to a life in 1863. It's Georgia. He's a black slave, and he opens up this regression by having his head beaten in by white Southern farmers, beating him to death.
Wow.
He's extremely emotional. He says, oh, my God, I'm being killed. Of course, he's perfectly safe while this is going on. Herman is his witness. And on the air, of course, he's trying to skirt the issue. And I said, well, Montel, you're being skeptical and you're welcome to your First Amendment rights, but didn't we have a little past life regression in your office with your brother Herman here as a witness? And he says, well, yes, he did. And didn't you go into this life very emotional? And you're not here to build up my career. Right. You're not patronizing me, are you? He says, no. And so obviously, if it worked with him, and this guy was really tough to work with. I mean, this guy was not fun. My point is that if you have an open mind, you don't have to be a protagonist. You don't have to be a groupie in this field. If you just have an open mind and a need to explore and you want to grow in some way, anyone can do the regressions and progressions. In fact, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for your listeners and people who follow your show here. If they order my Egypt book through my office, not in bookstores, but in my office, I will send them a free, included with the book, a free past life regression CD to guide them into their own past lives.
And that's great.
And the reason I do that is because in my theory and my statements, and I make several statements in the book about this, that every single one of us today, we've all had like 1,000 past lives. Every one of us has been involved in Egypt. You can count on that. That's a given. So I'd like your listeners who would read the book, not just to read the stories and the theory behind it and the historical, the archaeological stuff, the forbidden archaeology too, we can go into that, but also to actually experience it and learn from their own experiences in ancient Egypt. So they get a free CD if they order the book directly from us. But you have to mention the offer because I get offers from everywhere. If I don't know who they are, they won't get it. But just simply say that you heard me on Above Top Secret with Dave and that you want the free CD with the book, and I'll be happy to send it with you.
Great. Well, that's really interesting. But, you know, before I get into the Egypt thing, and I mean, I could have a field day with you with this Egypt thing, and I mean, I'm just tantalizing, just waiting to do it. You know, has there ever been, you know, and I mean, there's skeptics out there, Bruce. You and I both know this.
Oh, come on, you're kidding me.
I wouldn't sugarcoat it for you.
What was it, a Texas hoedown here? What's going on?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. We were having a Texas hoedown one day, and I said, hey, I'm going to introduce Dr. Bruce Goldberg. And he said, oh, I don't believe in that psychotherapy stuff. You know how those guys are in the country.
Only at the rodeo, okay.
Oh, yeah, only in the rodeo days. But seriously, you know, I mean, there's thousands of people out there, they're going to listen to this, they're going to say, that is a bunch of manure. And they are always those guys that sit there and say, well, he may be able to do that with Montel Williams or Jerry Springer or Dave Rabbit or whatever, but I know he couldn't do it with me. Have you ever come across anybody, Bruce, that you couldn't put under because they're just so stubborn?
Well, I tell you, very few, but here's an example of, I had a psychiatrist friend of mine. I used to be in Baltimore. I lived there for 17 years and establishing my first, you know, my hypnotherapy practice there. There was a psychiatrist, a really kindly guy. He had a great sense of humor. And what he would do was when he ran into a real psychotic patient that he just couldn't work with, he'd send them to me. This was a sense of humor, okay? So, I'm not kidding. So he sent me a lot of patients, not a lot of real patients, but also every once in a while he'd send me what I call the clinker. And this is his clinker. He sends me this woman, she's about 4'10", and she comes into my office and she has what we call trichotillomania. Now that may not mean anything to you, but those are people that twirl their hair and pull their hair out of their head.
Oh, those people drive me nuts.
Right. Well, they drive a lot of other people nuts. They're energy vampires in their own way. But anyway, So he says, now I'm sending you this woman, let's call her Estelle, okay, just not her real name, and she's a tri-kill Tulum, and he knows what I know what that is, and I've worked with that case before many times, okay? So he says, right. I want you to update me, or I'll give you a call the following day or so and just update me on the case. And I said, fine. So the woman comes in, and she's really a paranoid, she's a paranoid schizophrenic, okay? Say the least, on her best day, all right? And she's scanning my office, you know, and she's asking me all these weird questions about, are we being taped? Is the CIA outside, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And she's going into her routines, and I look at her, and she goes, I said, what's your real problem here? She goes, well, I was watching the 5 o'clock news last night, so automatically that's a problem, right? Especially in Baltimore.
Right.
As I was doing that, I was twirling my hair, and I pulled out the last of my hair follicles, and my scalp is bleeding a little bit, and I'm just bald. So I look at her, I'm seeing a woman with a complete head of hair, right? Remember, she's a paranoid schizophrenic anyway, so I'm saying, ma'am, I said, I don't want to hate to challenge you here, but I'm looking at you, you got a complete head of hair. Now she stands up with all 4 foot tenness of her, she goes, oh yeah? And she pulls off this wig. She's bald, like sort of like, remember Star Wars, the first movie, 1979 with the bald? Remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, you talk, yeah, well, actually, yeah, well, actually, there was also in the, the first original Star Trek, the movie.
Yeah, 1979. That was the one I'm talking
about. Yeah, the ball chick.
Right, the ball chick. Well, this girl looked like her, except she didn't have her physical prowess. Anyway, and I could see as she lowers her head to look at me, almost like a bull getting ready to charge, I could see a big red spot right in the middle of the top of her head, of her scalp. So she goes, now you see? And I said, okay. And I'm trying to calm her down, but she was impossible to work with. Now, I obviously couldn't work with her, and I let her go, of course. And then the following day, the psychiatrist calls me up, and this guy was on the floor in hysterics. He says, "How'd you like my patient?" And I says, "What is the matter with you?" That's a failure. Okay, that's one of my failures.
But I mean, I'm sorry, I was getting a drink of water. But do you ever get one that's not a plant that you just? It's a difficult time to get them to do either progression or regression, simply because. They just don't. You have to be a kind of in a mental state to where you're susceptible to whatever is happening.
Actually, all you have to do is be open. Most of the time, when I've never had a failure on television or radio. I've done live regressions on radio and TV, of course, many on TV. Most of those are taped now, but in the old days, they were strictly live, especially the news shows. I've never had a problem. I've been on local news here in Los Angeles and New York and other places. The only time I usually, because what I do is I prep the person first. In other words, I will run through the regression or progression before we go on the air. This gives me a chance to test them out. And also, we get more information the second time we do it, so it's a better regression and progression. It also makes them feel a little bit more confident and empowered, especially if they're a host of a show and they don't want to make a fool of themselves, you know, this kind of thing. Because sometimes the information they don't want to be released. And I said, that's fine. You know, so if you run through it, we know what not to discuss, what not to ask them. Well, the only exception to this was I was in San Francisco several years ago doing a Learning Annex class, doing a big workshop. And they have this early morning show. This is a radio. Now, you're in radio. This is a radio show. Can you imagine a radio show with a live audience?
Yeah, I can.
Well,
I
this is in San Francisco. This is like the studio looked like a 1940 radio station. Okay, it was really antiquated, but it was the equipment was modern. But I mean, the building was so old. And you go in there, and there's like 80 people in this audience. I've never gone to done a radio show where there was an audience there, okay? I mean, this is like... All right, so the guy is an ex-stand-up comic, and he said he's very open to the field. He says, okay, doctor, he says, you're going to regress me. And I said, okay, when do I work with you? He says, you're going to work with me during a news break. You got 4 minutes or 5 minutes, and then we're on the air. And when I come back, I want to be in a past life. No pressure, right?
Yeah, none.
So you understand, you have the distraction. You got 80 people in the audience now, okay? So you got that mentality. We're in sort of like a little booth, so it was a little bit isolated, which was nice. So we go into the news break. I've never worked with this guy. I have no idea who this guy is. So by the time we go through the news break, it's four and a half minutes. He comes out of trance. He's in trance, and now he's in the 1700s. He's a musical composer doing this beautiful past life on the air. And it was really nice, but again, that's the only time I never had a chance to prep anyone, and it still worked anyway. So to me, it doesn't mean that it's so fantastic for me. It's just that if a person's open to it, I mean, it's not a problem. I wouldn't work with somebody who thought I was the son of the devil because of their religious beliefs, you know, like a born-again Christian or something, who didn't like it, you know. That kind of person, forget it. Or a person who is, you know, just so adamantly, or one of the, or the not-so-amazing Randy. I wouldn't want to work with him either, okay?
There's a lot of people that wouldn't even want to meet the amazing Randy.
Yeah, well, I've, I, I've met him, believe me, no loss, okay? So my point here is that, so but basically if you're open to it, you know, the people I've worked with, especially the news media who are very skeptical in the beginning, if you're open to the concept, I do workshops with people who've never been through formal hypnosis before, and they go through the experiences, that's not the problem.
Yeah, you're right. All right, well, listen, we're going to get into what I want to spend the last part of our interview time with you, Bruce, and that is your latest book, which is Egypt, an Extraterrestrial and Time Traveler Experiment. So my very first question is, I mean, we all have a preconceived idea because we've had the Ten Commandments shoved down our throats every year since I was a kid, you know.
Right.
I'm 59, so I don't know, you know, we're about the same
age.
We're
exactly the same age.
Oh, well, great. Then, then the other thing, you know, when you see things, you know, that how they have an impact on you. And I mean, it just became my annual religious foray, if you will, to watch the Ten Commandments with Yul Brynner. But I mean, that's the image that everybody has about Egypt, okay? So what's wrong with the conventional history of Egypt?
Well, what's wrong with it is that you look at the Sphinx, for example. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, if they do their research, Robert Choke's work from Boston University showing that the Sphinx has water erosion, not sand erosion, on its body.
Right.
And water erosion in the Sahara Desert dates the Sphinx to a minimum, ultra-conservatively, 7,000 BC, most likely around 10,005 to about 11,000 BC. Well, if you look at your history books, it says 2,500 BC, the Pharaoh Chephren, who supposedly built the Pyramid of Giza, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, that doesn't work. So now we're talking about forbidden archaeology here. Secondly, the Pyramid of Giza, let's look at that for a moment. Japan, Tokyo, tried to rebuild or do the equivalent of the Pyramid of Giza about 10 years ago and failed with modern equipment. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
what do we learn from that? I mean, how do the Egyptians, how do these so-called primitive barbaric people, as many people describe them, which of course they weren't, if you look at their hieroglyphics and et cetera, Egypt had medical schools in 4000 BC with 35 different specialties, which I've documented in the book, whereas the rest of the world at the time was living in caves and being Ugga Ugga the caveman, with the exception of Sumeria. Okay, so basically what happened with it? So obviously they had help. They had help from who? Well, they had help from Atlantis. They had help from the previous civilization that used Atlantis as its colony, which was Lemuria, or Mu, as it's called. And they also had help from extraterrestrials and time travel from our future. And I document the actual progression of that, going through the chapters one by one to show that the various influences are there. And here's an example. People will laugh at the work, but here's something that's very, very, something you can't laugh at. If you go into the Sphinx, remember now, the Sphinx we know is automatically at least 10,000 years old. It has to be.
Oh, of course, of course.
Okay, and by the way, our geologists, if people think I'm making this up, there was a convention held in San Diego about 7 or 8 years ago with Robert Choke and others. There were 230 geologists representing all major universities in this country. They all agree with Choke that it's water erosion, not sand erosion. Okay, so it's not just my opinion. But basically, the Sphinx paws has a temple. There's actually temples in both paws, but the one I believe it's the left paw. If you go in there, you're going to see various little figurines that are meant to describe the various gods of ancient Egypt, okay, such as Isis and Osiris, are two of the major gods from Egyptian theology. Well, guess what? What do these Egyptian figurines look like? Now, they've been dated back to about 3,000 years ago, give or take. These figurines show Isis and Osiris being blonde, blue-eyed, and Caucasian. They actually painted these little figurines to show that, and they dated that. Now, here's the point. Egyptians today, you know what an Egyptian looks like today? That's what they looked like 2,000 years ago. Okay? So unless you have
haven't met one lately, but no.
Unless you had some flight attendants from Sweden coming in there and being very familiar with the Egyptians, there's no way in God's green earth that Egyptians should be painting little blonde, blue-eyed Caucasian figurines for their god.
Yeah.
Now, the way time travel will be discovered in about 3050 by a man named Tatos, and I go into details in the book, Tatos, he will come back in about 3050, about 1,000 years from now, 1,050 years, discover time travel, go back in time with a crew, with his team of chrononauts, as I call them, like our astronauts, and the team consists of Tatos, Isis, Osiris, Horus, and Geb. And if your listeners know anything about Egyptology and ancient history, those were all worshipped as gods in ancient Egypt. And wouldn't if you were to go back in time just 1,000 years ago into the year 1000 AD, wouldn't you, if you brought in like an MP3 player, a computer, and a few little doodads, wouldn't you be either stoned, burned at the stake, or worshipped as a god, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you say that, because in other interviews that I've done, and people that have an expertise in the similar area, or you know, a sidebar area of what we're talking about with Egyptology and stuff, every one of them, without exception, has made the statement, and I know you concur, that, you know, I could go back as Dave Rabbit from 2007, and if I had the ability to do time travel, I could go back in somewhere before Christ or whatever. I could appear with, you know, a cigarette lighter or whatever.
Right, sure.
And people look at me, and as you say, they're either going to stone me, like maybe one of the Monty Python shows, or they're going to, you know, anoint me as a god. Now, you know, I want to get your opinion, Bruce.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this is a sidebar. I just like asking questions about people that have a hell of a lot more insight into it than I do, just to see if I'm, you know, am I really a nut, or do I have, you know, is there a glimmer of hope for the old Davester here? And that is, I have always believed, now it doesn't mean that I'm right or wrong or whatever, but it's just something that makes logical sense to me.
Okay.
And this gets exactly to what we were just talking about. If a time traveler went back in time and was conceived as, at the time, Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
okay? Let's say Jesus Christ, just for hypothetical conversation.
All right.
Let's say Jesus Christ is a time traveler. He goes back in time, or however the, you know, the Mary, the pregnancy thing, however you want to work all that stuff. But let's say that he is an advanced life form from wherever, another dimension.
Or the future of our current society.
Yeah, the future, coming back, and time travel, whatever. I mean, the fact that he can heal people or whatever, I mean, it could be anybody that was really Jesus Christ, couldn't it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you bring up a very interesting point, because a couple of things. One is that your typical MO of a time travel, the Caucasian, or the human form, if you will, I talk about
right.
the four different types of time travelers. You have the little gray, the little Steven Spielberg ETs, you have the hybrids, you have
yeah.
reptilians, and then, you, of course, you have the pure humans. The pure humans, the classic pure human time traveler is, number one, very tall, about 6.5 to 7 feet tall, if you will. They're blonde, blue-eyed,
right.
and Caucasian. The reason why they're Caucasian is because anytime they used the other races, they were killed, because people don't worship dark-skinned people. They worship blonde Caucasians.
Right.
And so what Jesus is always pictured as blonde and blue eyes, right, or at least light brown hair, if you will, and
right,
Caucasian,
right,
and very
right.
tall, right? Even though, of course, mm-hmm. if he was a Jew in those days, he would be about the size of an Egyptian today, okay? That's a little problem with the image of Jesus, the way it's been portrayed. But at the same time, they had a technique called quantum medicine, which I describe in the Egypt book, which means that if you saw somebody who died and you caught them within 24 hours, you could resuscitate them by using very advanced technology. You could even replace lost limbs. And you could
wow,
also use
yeah.
anti-gravity devices, which was used by time travelers in ancient Egypt, and therefore you could walk on water, if you get the drift. If you have the MO of a time traveler, which would be Jesus being the blonde, blue-eyed and tall or whatever, if he could walk
right.
on water, if he could do anti-gravity techniques, if he could heal the blind and resuscitate the dead, if you will. Now,
right.
at the same time, dealing with the Old Testament patriarchs, remember now, they lived very long. You know, Adam was like 950 years old, and Methuselah was the oldest man in the Bible, 969. Then he died, the classic quote from the Old Testament. Well, guess what? In the future, you're going to have something called an alpha syncolarium, a technology technique that I describe in the book, where the average person, because of using very advanced technology, their DHEA in the body, which is a sex hormone, which eventually becomes testosterone or estrogen, it actually
right.
Builds up our immune system by stimulating the T lymphocytes, which fights viral diseases like cancer and AIDS and everything else that's viral. They're going to live to between 500 and 900 years young by the 35th century. So if you've got a guy who looks exactly like Jesus, at least the way we portray him, and he lives to be between 500 and 900 years old or young, and then he can do all the things we just imagined, now you just got yourself of Jesus very possibly being a time traveler. He fits into every aspect of the MO.
Right. So in other words, it's not completely out in left field that, I mean, it's just a possible explanation. Doesn't mean it's the exact explanation, you know, and I mean, for all our religious friends that are listening, we're not trying to be anti-religious or whatever. You know, I just like having conversations with people and get different ideas about possibilities. And, you know, it's like I've always told every lousy attorney I've ever fired. You know, if you weren't there personally and didn't physically see it with your own eyes, everything else is speculation. You know.
Well, but here's another point. Talking about evidence now, there's a very interesting evidence. There's a couple of hieroglyphics that really that are really relevant here that should be discussed. One is the Egyptian temple wall panel in Abydos, which is about 300 miles south of Cairo. This has been pictured on TV many times, Fox and all these places. And if you look at this temple wall in Abydos, you're going to see the equivalent of a modern-day helicopter, two UFOs, although some people think one's a submarine, but either way, it's very advanced technology, and one is a stealth jet. Now, the problem with this is that the images on these walls have been dated to the Ptolemy era in Egypt, which goes back to about 2,300 to 2,000 years ago. The Ptolemies were the ones that inherited Egypt after Alexander the Great died, which is about 333 A.D. to 30 B.C., to 30 B.C. when Cleopatra the VIII died. Now, the key issue here is that you've got these modern crafts, especially flying crafts, and especially the UFO, they're classic. I just wish if your listeners could just type into their Google in Abydos, they'll see what I'm talking about.
Spell that for them.
Abydos.
Okay.
The Egyptian, just type in Abydos, the Egyptian temple of Abydos, and your Google will give you these depictions. Now, another one to type in is Dendera, and that's D-E-N-D-E-R-A. This is a really beautiful one, because in Dendera, what you have here is a depiction of electricity in ancient Egypt. Again, this has been dated to the Ptolemy era, so we're talking about conservatively 2,000 years ago to 2300. You have a braided cable attached to these two high-voltage insulators, if you will, and you have primitive Crookes tubes illustrated. Crookes tubes, folks, is television. So now we have a conservative estimate with braided cables and all the things, and I, by the way, had engineers look at this, and they tell me, this is a high-voltage insulator, this is guaranteed electricity, there's no way in the world this is not electricity. So this is how the Egyptians had to have internal lighting to build the Pyramid of Giza and other megaliths, because it's simply, as you're closing it up, you got to have lighting. And they didn't use torches because there's no soot on the walls. We know that. So they had some sort of illumination, and electricity is the only real possibility. On the more extreme level, we have potentially television in ancient Egypt. The skeptics won't believe it until they find a TV guide in hieroglyphics. But trust me, folks, this is very impressive evidence. Just type in the Temple of Dendera, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Wow.
It's very impressive, and it's, again, showing a lot of forbidden archaeology aspects of this, which, of course, I point out in the book many other examples of how we have things that cannot possibly be explained by conventional science and conventional Egyptology or archaeology.
Right. You know, I tell you, there's a question I'm dying to ask you, and I'll tell you why. On AboveTopSecret.com, we have a what we call a conspiracy master. We have several. And one of them is a good friend of ours by the name of John Rhodes. And he is a cryptologist or whatever that is. But he has an ability, or has for the last 20, 25 years, have researched about reptilians,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Right.
And the reason why I want to kind of preface that is because you mentioned reptilians earlier, and can you maybe tell me a little bit about what your perception is about reptilian time travelers?
Okay, reptilian time travelers are not part of a team of the Kwannot team. They are basically nasty, evil criminals who simply are running away from future time cops. You will not see good stories about reptilians. In fact, reptilians usually are very cannibalistic, so they tend to eat their mistakes, which is why you have very few reports of reptilians versus the Greys and all the others that you see, the Pleiadians and all the others. Secondly, the reptilians are also been involved, as you know, I'm sure you're familiar with this, the Dulce New Mexico underground base. Do you remember the big hullabaloo in 1979? There was a big rebellion about the Greys and the reptilians that killed almost everybody in the base. Only a few people escaped. Some of them were alive to talk about it. But the people who started this were the reptilians. They're just nasty, nasty son of a guns. And in the future, they don't have the wings. They're not the Draco types, but they're even as nasty, if not nastier, than they are today. So you don't want to run into a reptilian, and you're not going to hear much about them because, again, they tend to kill the people that contact them.
All right, well, let me, while we're on that subject, and not necessarily about reptilians, but do you believe, Bruce, that there is interdimensional traveling through time?
Sure. As a matter of fact, the Pleiadians are actually the gatekeepers of the time portals. My research, and I'm not the only one, has shown that some of these, like Jacques Vallée, I'm sure you know who he is.
Right.
He said all extraterrestrials that we perceive are interdimensional. I disagree with that. There are those that actually come here via craft, so by using what we call Alcubierre warp drive, which is a way of like Star Trek warp drive, so you can actually travel across the universe in a much shorter period of time than Einstein would have predicted. But yes, there are interdimensional travelers. There are people that go from one dimension to another and travel faster than the speed of light, literally, by doing that. They do the envelope theory, as we call that. But there are ones that don't have to do that. I mean, for example, there are people who've been abducted where, like in New York City, okay? You say, how can you be abducted in New York City? Everybody would observe it. There's 8 million people in that city. Well, what happens is they abduct him by going through tears in the fabric of space-time, and they can actually abduct him interdimensionally, as you're describing it, sort of like come through a hole in the wall that isn't really a hole. It's a dimensional tear, if you will. And they can take them into the fifth dimension. And I talk about that in both the Egypt book as well as my Time Travels from Our Future book, where I give several case histories of people doing that. So the answer is yes, the mathematical models are there. By the way, the mathematicals of time travels for the skeptics out there. Kip Thorne, in September 26, 1988, wrote a scientific article in the Physical Review Letters. He did that as a favor to his good friend at the late Carl Sagan, who was doing that research for his novel Contact, which became a feature film with Jodie Foster, if you remember that.
And, oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, especially the last 20 minutes. I thought the movie kind of dragged, but the last 20 minutes was fun. Okay, that was a carnival ride. But the point is that Kip Thorne's research going back 19 years ago has never been disavowed, and so it stands today as accurate mathematical models showing that if we had exotic matter, and this gets very technical, but if we had this thing called exotic matter, which moves forward in time and has negative mass, which is the opposite of antimatter, we could have a time machine. We have the models to do that. We don't have the exotic matter. So the theories that I'm talking about when time travels come back in time, I go into the mechanics of this in both the Egypt book and the Time Travel Smart Future book. They're actually enlarging a wormhole to classic size, enough of them and the craft to go in, and we have the models to do that today. So this is not as unusual as people would think. The problem as to why you don't have the evidence, like in the Dendera case, why don't we have those television sets from ancient Egypt, there's three little words, Men in Black. Men in Black will always abscond all the evidence and always try to always prevent us, because if a time traveler was to go on CNN today, a Man in Black would take him out. And for those people that want documentation, the Air Force Special Activity Center, AFSAC, specifically the 1127th Field Activity Group, is your current example of a modern Air Force's Men in Black. Those are, William Moore will talk about it, and others will talk about them. There's also Men in Black who are interdimensional ones. These are what's called the Black Brotherhood. These are lower astral entities. There are Men in Black who are futuristic Men in Black from the future, time travelers, if you will. And then there are ETs that can function. As you remember the old reports in the 40s and 50s, if you remember reading those reports, those were ETs that really were weird, and you know they had all this technology, but they couldn't figure out how to use a ballpoint pen, you know, those kind of ones. I detail those in my Time Travels from My Future book in detail if people want to read about it. But the point is that the Men in Black are not for our best interests. The military and the governments in general, I don't have to tell you this, they're always paranoid. They're always control freaks. They feel that we can't handle the truth. You know, you can't handle the truth, you know, the quote Jack Nicholson, you know. But we can.
You do a pretty good imitation of Nicholson, you know. I like that. You might add that to your resume there, Bruce.
I don't
you know?
Do Tom Cruise, okay.
Hey, I can't do it either.
It's okay. I don't like placentas, sorry, but all right, that's okay.
Well, listen, you know, talking about all the stuff in Egypt, you know, I mean, you brought up the fact about the televisions and stuff. I mean, unequivocally, you believe it's true that Egypt had electricity and television.
They had
right?
to. In fact, they electroplated their jewelry and their vases. We know from the work of Mariette, this French archaeologist from about 40 years ago, we know they electroplated. They had to have some form of electricity. That's not even an argument today. The question is, in what form was it? So, and no scientist today, if he studies the evidence and looks at the physical experience that we have, especially the Egyptian pottery, et cetera, there's no way in the world they didn't have. We found, remember the Baghdad battery that was 2,000 years old that produced about 2 volts of electricity.
Right.
You know about that? Or what about What about that Greek computer they found in the Mediterranean? You know, this thing dates about 2,000 years ago. It was this off the coast of Greece. It was actually like a mini computer. It was this little thing that could be used as a computer. So we have lots of examples from ancient times, from antiquity, of things that we have the steam engine that was developed by this guy named Hero. He was an early 1st or 2nd century Roman inventor, and he developed a miniature steam engine. That's on display in the Smithsonian.
Right.
We didn't use it in our country or in our world until 1700s, give or take, but we had. So there's a lot of examples of technology that we really can't explain. There are things that and don't forget, the time travelers as well as the ETs, they did their abductions. And in the book goes several examples of the abductions. More UFO sightings are noted in July on a Wednesday and the 24th of the month for some reason. My research shows that, and so does the research of others. And the summertime is a big time, and they tend to like warm weather because you don't hear about too many UFO sightings in Siberia in the wintertime, do you? You don't. They're almost always in warm weather.
Well, you made an interesting statement right there, and I want you to clarify for our listeners, what is the difference, Bruce, between an ET and a time traveler?
Well, the ETs, of course, come from this current century, therefore they're not time travelers. They're the ones that are not interdimensional, the ones that just come from Zeta Reticuli or from the Draconian thing, if they're reptilians, or the Pleiades system, if you will. They're several, hundreds of dozens of light years away. But those are current day. If they're current day, they're not time travelers. If they come from the future, then they're time travelers.
Okay. Well, now here's another question. I know what quantum physics is, but what is quantum medicine?
Oh, quantum medicine is a technique that's done in, it's established by the 31st century, where they use various equipment to actually do things like replace lost limbs, to generate, to alter our DNA, to resuscitate people who have died if they catch them within 24 hours. So to think of, it's almost like, bones on Star Trek here, very advanced medicine by using energy more so than surgical instruments, if you will, to recharge our own life force, our soul, our subconscious mind, or life force, and to actually use our auric field around us as well as what we call very complicated things. See, this is where I would refer your listeners to my Time Travels to My Future book, because I go into the real mechanics. Quantum medicine is extremely technical, and for me to try to explain it in a minute is not going to do it justice. It will just confuse people. But let's just say that the whole mechanisms of that are described in my Time Travels to My Future book with clinical examples. But we're using energy. Think of it as energy medicine, but it's not going to be around for about 1,000 years.
Well, you and I, of course, you probably won't, Bruce. You'll probably be right there with them. But, the old Dave-O-Matic here may be 6 feet under. Hey, will you do me a favor, Bruce? And when you're up there, can you kind of come back in time, find Dave Rabbit's grave, and dig me up and give me, a revitalization shot or something?
I got to catch you within 24 hours. I can't wait 1,600 years. Okay?
Oh, God. Well, that sucks. I mean, then I guess, I'm going to be worm bait.
Well, look,
or
think of it this
way.
Your soul that occupies the Dave Rabbit body now is eternal. So you're going to reincarnate. And how about reincarnating into a very positive future? See, people always talk about the negative stuff today, the terrorism, all the other garbage.
Right.
And my work shows that, folks, the future is positive. When you get past this century, things are like on a geometric progression towards positivity. Spirituality, high technology, elimination of crime, cancer and AIDS are cured, we control the weather, all kinds of fun things. There's no poverty, there's no more, little wars, there's no nuclear wars or any of those problems. Politics is under far more control. Democratic nations, nations are democratic. Nobody's fighting each other, per se. So when you get beyond the 21st century, things are really on a very high sky ride, including extraterrestrial contact and all the fun stuff. So, there are very few people out there that I know that are preaching things like that. Most people are just into the idea of, life's a bitch and then you die. And I'm not into that at all.
All right, one last question, then I'm going to let you go, because I know you got a lot of things going on, Bruce. But, I've got to ask you this question, because you're so knowledgeable in so many different areas. It's like going into a smorgasbord and just, having a field day and just picking a little bit of everything. But what is your take on what you think will happen or not happen, if you will, on the 2012 December 21st thing?
Yeah, December 21st, 2012 is when the Mayan calendar runs out, and the reason for that is because they ran out of rock.
Wait a minute.
They ran out of rock. Now, the reason I say this is because I've done progressions to the exact date. I've done progressions to December 22nd, 2012, and beyond. And guess what? It's, as they say, just another day. There's absolutely no problems. By the way, several years ago, I was on, I do a lot of interviews with Coast to Coast, and I was interviewed with Art back in 1999, and I was the only one of his guests that said, Y2, okay, no problemo, as we say in Los Angeles. None of his guests acknowledged that. None of his guests did that, and guess what? I was right because I did the progressions, and I knew there'd be no problems, and everybody was tap dancing and kind of like, you know, hiking their bets, and I was saying, no, folks, if there's going to be a problem, come to me. You can yell and scream me all you want to. So basically, my progressions were right there, and they're going to be right here. So basically, 2012, I know they're trying to – people are trying to get scared, and all the books are going to come out, and the TV specials, all that kind of stuff for ratings and money and feeding off of people's insecurities and fears. But basically, don't – just ignore it. It'll take 5 years, but just 5 years from what, tomorrow, right? And just ignore it, and you're going to find yourself having just another day, enjoy yourself, go Christmas shopping, whatever you're going to do, and just don't worry about 2012.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to log this down in my little book of sayings. They ran out of rock. I love that. They ran out of rock. What a great way to sit there and say that's all that 2012, December 21st, is going to be, is that the guys just ran out of rock and say, let's just leave it here and let it go at that. And then they all went home and, you know,
because to believe in the Mayan calendar, you also have to believe in the Mayans were extraterrestrials that are going to suck everybody up and take them to planet Zuma, you know? I mean, so there's other things other than just the fact of doomsday. And by the way, how many doomsdays have been predicted? Study the history of the Mormon Church. Study the history of the Seventh-day Adventist people to see about all the doomsday predictions, including the Catholic Church going back to the Dark and Middle Ages. So a lot of people, anybody can predict it. Sort of like economists today, you know, the only profession where you're paid to be wrong, economists have predicted 7 of the last 3 recessions, okay? I mean, so if you want to play Chicken Little, once in a while, you may be right, but you're not really doing the justice to the universe, you know?
Yeah. Well, listen, I tell you, I've become a huge Dr. Bruce Goldberg fan, and I can't thank you enough for your time. And I want to remind all the members and the people that worldwide that will pick up this show in the next 30 to 60 days with feeds all over the world, that Bruce's website, which you've got to go to, this is absolute must, you've got to go to www.drbrucegoldberg.com. That's for you that can't spell, drbrucegoldberg.com. Bruce, I can't tell you what a great joy it was to talk to you. You've been just a terrific guest, and I've had just a tremendous time with you.
Well, as a matter of fact, Dave, it's quite reciprocal, and I would love to reincarnate on your show. You've got a great show here, and there are many other topics we can discuss. I'm more than open for this because I believe in communication, and you're a good old boy.
Well, I'd love to do that sometime.
I'm quite curious.
Can you do a regression? I'm just curious. Can you do a regression without physically being in the same room?
No, the only time I can actually do that, I really have to be there. The only thing I could do is if I did something like I do Skype sessions. I do like video sessions with people by using a computer. But I've got to see the person I'm working with and preferably being in the same room with them, because there was too many distractions and things going on that would prevent or cause all kinds of other issues.
Right. Well, my partner, Johnny Anonymous, is in Los Angeles area, so we go to San Juan once a year to the Bay Area UFO Expo. So, you know, what we might be fun to do is, when that comes back around, get in contact with you, and we'll arrange doing the video kind of thing.
Oh, sure. I'd be more than happy to do that. That's not a problem at all.
I would love to.
As a matter of fact, what I'd like to do is not only doing a regression, but do something even more apropos at the same time, or following the regression. We can do something that I call a fifth-dimensional travel experience, which is like an out-of-body experience, and you can actually do this, and there are exercises on my site for your listeners to do that. They can actually meet time travelers. They can meet their departed loved ones. They can meet spirit guides. They can do anything they want with the fifth dimension, because that's the dimension beyond our three dimensions that we see with our physical five senses, and time is the fourth dimension. So fifth-dimensional travel is really the key techniques that are a lot more fun than just playing a few games with hypnosis here with a regression and progression.
Wow. Well, again, Bruce, I can't thank you enough. And again, I want to remind everybody that I am going to, when we put this show up, and it'll depend on when our schedule is, but when we put this show up, I will have a shortcut on the show thread that goes directly, that you can click directly and go to Bruce's site. And also, we will have a a copy of his the front of his book, his latest book, also there for you to peruse. But when you go to his site, I mean, just you could go to his site and spend a day or two. He's got so many interesting things on there. And
Bruce, there's lots of articles on there for them too. There's about 30 articles.
As we've been talking, I've been clicking, I've been having a great time, you know, because it's like going into a grocery store and you're starving your buttocks off and you don't know what you want to snack on, you know? I mean, there's so many things there, Bruce. Congratulations for what just a marvelous.
I appreciate it. Remember, one last thing is if they want to get the book from my site, if they mention that they heard you be on this show, they will get the free past life regression CD, which will go along with the book, which will let them go back into their own past lives in ancient Egypt or any place else.
Great. All right, Bruce. Well, listen, I really appreciate the time, and you've just been an absolute joy to have on the show.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. You've been an absolute joy host.
Okay, brother. Have a good evening.
You too now.
All right, thanks, Bruce.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.